It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 6:07 at News Talk WSB, 69 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I am Walter Reeves, and I am here to help you be more successful with whatever you want to do in your garden. If you want to have a better lawn or prettier flowers or less weeds or just anything that just makes you happy, then you should give me a call, 404-872-0750. Ask a question, and we'll see if we can get you where you want to be. One of the things that I have been thinking about this week is that the fine line between flower and weed, and it's not that uncommon for someone to send me a picture of a plant and say, Mr. Reeves, is this a flower or is it a weed? This week it's been a succession of spiderwort. Do you remember what spiderwort looks like? It's a blue flower usually. And it's sort of grassy looking, sort of, and it gets sprawly, and it's a pretty flower. I mean, no doubt it's a pretty flower. I've seen it sold, as a matter of fact, in nurseries. But once spiderwort has its way in your garden, then around and around it goes, and sprawly all over everything it goes, and so it becomes, in my view, a weed after a while. Of course, the rule for what is a weed and what is a flower is any plant that makes you unhappy is a weed, and any plant that makes you happy can be a flower. Oh, simple as that. When we were in Italy a couple of weeks ago, there were yellow flowers everywhere. And when we asked what they were, everybody says, well, those are weeds. Well, no, they weren't. They were yellow. They were beautiful. They were wonderful. They covered the fields everywhere with white, yellow flowers. Hawkweed is like that now. You can see hawkweed next to the drive, next to the highway. It's just about everywhere you go in Georgia. And that yellow-flowered hawkweed is quite an attractive flower. But after a while, it becomes sort of a weed-looking plant. I was spraying Roundup, actually. My friend, Vicki Cooper. I'm not sure if I can call her my friend. I will call her my friend because we worked together in the Extension Service in DeKalb County for so many years. My friend, Vicki Cooper, gave me a plant one time. She said, Walter, this is the best ground cover you've ever seen. It's got these green and silver leaves on it. It's called Yellow Archangel. You'll really like it. Plant it in the garden in your backyard. See if you don't like it. So I planted Yellow Archangel in my backyard, and I have come to regret that in the 20-some years since I planted. I have regretted it heartily every time I see it. Silver, green leaves, attractive. Yellow flowers in the spring, yeah, sure, okay, attractive enough. But every plant that gets in its way, it simply goes over. All of my green and gold is at risk. All of my ajuga is at risk. All of my ferns and azaleas are at risk. It will climb up and over sometimes, those plants too. I don't much care for Yellow Archangel. It can be a terrible, terrible weed. My friend down in Fayette County, Stephen Sinchcombe, says that poison ivy is a very attractive flower. He likes poison ivy. He said, you know, it's got great color in the fall. It's got pretty little flowers in the spring. It has berries that feed the birds, so it's got to be a three-season kind of plant. So he likes the characteristics of poison ivy. Some plants are thugs. Some plants are not so much thugs. Some plants, even ajuga, as I mentioned, I have it planted in a place where I like it to be. But sometimes ajuga can be a problem as well. Well, if you have a plant that you think is a thug, or you want to know if I think it's a thug, or if it is a flower, then give me a call. Again, our phone number, 404-872-0750. Brother Charlie from down in Florida calls. Hey, Charlie, good morning.
How y'all doing up there?
We are. Right. What's going on with you down in Florida?
Okay. My mom always said this thing, 7-year seed, 7-year weed.
Yeah.
What's the viable lifespan, I guess, of a seed?
Because
down here, if you start planting that sugar sand, yeah, you know, you wait and it doesn't come, then your time passes, then it gets too late to plant. Yeah. So I just wondering if my seed, see what I done? I took a bunch of pink-eyed purple hulls.
Yeah, peas.
And we planted some last year, and they didn't grow, but they weren't 7 years old either. So I just, do seed just go bad after?
It depends on the seed, as you can imagine. I'm thinking now lotus. Lotus plants are a real pretty flower. They grow in Egypt. They have found lotus seeds in the pyramids, Charlie, 1,000 years old, more than 4,000 or 5,000 years old, some of them, and have germinated those lotus seeds after so many years because they have such a thick, hard coat on them that even now when I've sprouted lotus seeds myself, you have to file the coat off of it to get it to sprout. So it depends on what seed you have. Some of the seeds like crabgrass and things like that we have in the lawns here, they might last 2 or 3 years, I think. There's one we have up here. You may have it down in Florida, too, called mimosa weed. And mimosa weed, I think, lasts 4 or 5 years in the soil. It can last a good long while. So I guess it all depends on the conditions under which the seed stays or is stored or in the soil, how deep it is, how warm it is, how moist it is. It depends on the
variety. I got them in a small mason jar with a rubber lid, and it's kind of airtight. I didn't know if it, you know, maybe dried out. And
cool is probably the thing that you need to be sure that it keeps current at. And the temperature for seeds usually needs to be sometime below 40 degrees. Below 40, not many plant processes happen. And so if it wants to germinate, it just can't. The temperature is not high enough. So at 40 degrees and below, which would be, for a lot of people, the crisper drawer of their refrigerator is about right, or a really, really cool basement might be good.
Uh-huh.
Keeping them dry is the other thing. And so the rubber ring on the jar is a good idea. But even further than that, some folks that I know save the little packets you get in the shoes and things that get shipped. Sometimes they have those packets of silica gel. And they'll put the silica gel in with the seeds to keep them dry in there. And another person that I know takes dry milk, just plain old powdered dry milk, Charlie, and puts it in a piece of tissue paper and puts rubber bands around it and then drops that in, puts about a tablespoon, I think, per pint. And that tablespoon of dry milk inside the jar keeps the seeds, he says, dry. It's tomato seeds. It keeps it dry pretty well from one season to the next. He says tomatoes to germinate at least 2 or 3 years old, I think. Dry and cool. That's what you want.
Well, come see us.
Aye. Tell them all we said hey down in Florida, Charlie.
I'll do it.
We'll see you, man.
Bye.
404-872-0750. Get you in to take Charlie's place. Patty is down in McDonough, Henry County. Hey, Patty. Good morning.
Hey, Walter.
Hey, Patty.
Hey, I have a Rose of Sharon Diana plant.
Yeah.
I bought it from New Jersey. I planted it in March. They shipped it, you know, the right time or whatever for our area, and it's about 4 feet tall, so it's, you know, big.
Yeah.
And it's got no leaves on it. Like, it's still dead.
That doesn't sound good. Does it have any green underneath the bark?
When I scrape it, it's really not green. It's a kind of whitish beige, but it's real flexible and moist beneath the bark.
Why would it not have sprouted? It is certainly warm enough. It is sunny enough. It is everything a plant needs to make leaves on it enough to do it right now. What is going on with the Rose of Sharon? I would give it another little while, I guess, to at least the 1st of June. But I'm real curious. It should have something on it, seeing now some buds, at least swelling or something going on. But if it's stored in cool storage, and they do that, you know, they harvest the plants and the fields out in the fall sometimes and put them in cold storage, and then they ship them to the customers like you out of the cold storage place. And so if it is in deep dormancy in the storage area, then I suppose it might take a little longer than we might expect to break dormancy and bud up and make leaves and all. So I would, 1st of June easily. Call me back in the first week of June and let us consider the situation a little bit further, Patty, because it should be green now, I would think. I would think it should be green now.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Walter.
All right. Talk to you soon, Patty. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Bye.
And real quick, let's get Pat in here. Hey, Pat, good morning. Welcome to Lawn and Garden.
Hi, Walter.
Hey,
how
Pat.
Are you this morning?
I'm great. How can I help?
Listen, I have some Leland cypress that are grown into ginormous trees, and they need to be pruned back. Everyone I have ever seen that has been pruned has a flat top now instead of a pointed top.
Yeah.
So, and that may be the only way you can do it. So I wanted to know when would be the best time to prune those. And I also would like to know where is the best place to plant Lily of the Valley.
Well, let's see first. The Leland cypress, you can prune them just about any time, I would say, Pat. I mean, spring now is a good time to do it because it gets a little bit of boost and rejuvenation and wants to cover over the stubs and things you make when you prune. So I don't see any reason you couldn't prune it now. July and August, when it's hot, is probably not the best time to prune it because it's needing water to heal the cuts, and you don't have a lot of water available but then. So let's say now is about the best time to go do some pruning of the Leland cypress. On Lily of the Valley, I've never been successful, and I say that because I have never been successful, but I passed a plot, it's been a couple of years ago, down in Candler Park, I think it was, that they had the prettiest little, it was 10 by 10, full of Lily of the Valley. It was growing great. It smelled good as I drove past. I thought, man, they really know what they're doing with Lily of the Valley. It was semi-shade, Pat. It did not get more than a couple of hours of sunshine during the day. That might help during the summertime because Lily of the Valley does not like to be dried out. So semi-shade is all I can say, and in probably pretty rich soil there in Candler Park where they haven't been, you know, scraped flat like they do in subdivisions outside of Atlanta. So I would say semi-shade and try to keep it cool in the summertime, and good luck for you.
All right, I'll let you know.
All right, Pat. Thanks
for
calling.
Thanks so much.
We'll
bye-bye.
See you. 618 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
Look into your apartment.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Another carbon copy weekend. 40% chance of rain both today and tomorrow. High today, 83. Low, 67 overnight. And the same for Sunday. High of 84, maybe 85 and 67 overnight. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Bob's up and coming, and Bob joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning, Walter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man. What's up?
I called you last spring, and we agreed on a plan to revitalize my Bermuda lawn, and that was to aerate. And then I put down 6 yards of top dressing,
nice.
And I also fertilized. And I could not have had a better lawn last year.
Oh,
it was
great.
Just plush and gorgeous.
Great.
This year, I duplicated the process. And it is less than optimal,
huh.
And it almost looks like it's sprigged. That's how intermittent the grass is. The only thing I think I have changed, I really didn't cut the Bermuda 3 times before putting down the top dressing. So I'm wondering, could I have suffocated the Bermuda by putting the half inch of top dressing or so down before
Not be too much. I would not think a half inch would be too much, but yeah, I guess it's possible, depending on the density of the top dressing. How's your fertilizer been going? How much fertilizer you put down?
I always use Turf Builder, and I put down enough for 5,000 square feet, which is what my lawn, the size of my lawn.
You did that about how long ago?
It was a week ago Monday, two weeks ago tomorrow that I aerated. And then the next day, I started putting down the top dressing and the fertilizer.
You know, I think time's going to tell. I don't think you've done anything terribly unremediable. So my bet is it's in 2 or 3 weeks, probably, Bob, everything's going to look fine. I'm not sure you need to top dress again. As long as the grass is growing well and is relatively level, then top dressing isn't needed anymore. So I would stick with the Turf Builder, and you're doing fine with that, or any turf fertilizer, 2 or 3 maybe times for Bermuda grass, 3 times during the summertime. Unless the soil is really hard, I don't think you need to aerate it again. So I think you're fine. I think we just have to let time take its course, and the sprigs, as you say, the little sprigs of Bermuda grass will come up through the top dressing. They'll spread out over the top, and by I think mid-June anyway, you're going to have a nice-looking lawn. Good luck with it then, man. We'll see you soon. It's 6:28 at News Talk WSB. Back to more Lawn and Garden after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 6:36 on a Saturday morning, 69 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, and I am here to help you. All you got to do is give me a call. It's the only way I can help, 404-872-0750. Lauren, down in St. Simon's Island with a question about Japanese maples. Hey, Lauren, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, man, what's up?
My wife wants a Japanese maple. We have a very small lot.
Yeah.
Well, is there any specific variety you would recommend?
She probably wants one of the lace leaf Japanese maples, and they're going to have a hard time in St. Simons because lace leaf Japanese maples, one's a little bitty thin leaves. They're really, really pretty. I had no doubt about that, but boy, they need some water and they need some shade in St. Simons, so it's worth a try. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Lauren.
Lace leaf
Japanese maple, and there are several different kinds. I'll go to a nursery down there and just say, what do your Japanese maples look like? And do you know if she wants a tall one or one of those little dome with a little mushroom shape?
She wants a shorter one because we have a very small lot.
Yeah. Just go to a nursery and say what you got and see if they have one that has survived better than others in St. Simons and see what's going on. But it's got to have shade. Do not put it in sandy soil in full sun because it'll dry up in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, we do have the sandy soil.
Yeah, sure.
Shade. All right, that's what I need to know. But one other thing, sometime this morning, would you spend some time talking about Nuss Edge and how to get it out of the road?
You know, it started this morning at 6 o'clock talking about plants that are pretty sometimes and ugly some other times. Boy, I can't think of a thing about Nuss Edge other than it's green that makes it any kind of good plant. Boy, Nuss Edge.
If you have a good idea how to get it out of a rose garden. You know, it would be easier out of a lawn, but out of a rose garden is a challenge.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I'll tell you the truth, Lauren. The way that I have gotten control of nut grass in my vegetable garden was not using a spray, but using a tool called the water weeder or the water-powered weeder or some water and weeder in the same title for it. I got it from an online catalog, A.M. Leonard, or one of the good online garden tool catalogs. But if you go on my website and type water weeder, it'll take you to the right place so you can see the link to the catalog. But the water weeder is like a little pistol. It connects to your water hose. It has a long, thin brass tube that comes out of it about a foot and a half long. And when you pull the trigger on the pistol, of course, it spews water out the tube. And so I put these, every time I see a little bit of Nuss Edge in my vegetable garden, I take this and connect it up, pull the trigger, and put it right beside the leaf, and it would bore down and make a big slurry out of the soil around it. And as you know, Nuss Edge gets its name because all this little chain of nuts, those little bitty thumb, you know, finger-sized nuts that string along underneath the ground. And it's hard to pull those out unless the soil is really, really soft, which is what the water weeder does. It makes the soil really, really slurry, mud-like soft. And so you just pull up a whole bunch of them at the same time because they don't have any resistance in the soil. So I used the water weeder. That's what I did.
All right, I'll try that. Of course, you cannot get it one at a time. You have to dig under. And you say get those little nuts as well.
Yeah. And that's why I like the water weeder, because you could pull, and you actually pull up two or three or four of the nuts all at one time because it was so soft they just pull right out of the soil.
Work on that. Appreciate it, Walter.
Lauren, great talking to you. Again, the water weeder. Go to my website, walterreeves.com. Just type water weeder or water-powered weeder or water weeds or something like that. And you show some pictures. It's actually pictures of Nuss Edge that I got up out of my garden using the water weeder. It worked great. Daniel is up and coming. Hey, Daniel. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Walter. How are you?
Hey, man. All right. What's up?
Excellent. I got about 20 fruit and nut trees of different varieties, and 19 of them are flowered or bearing fruit or leafed out. I've got this one cherry that's full of buds.
Yeah.
The bark looks great. It's still a little green when I scratch it back.
Oh.
But none of the buds have broken open. It seems a little late in the year already.
Yeah,
do you have any tricks to encourage that?
What kind of cherry is it?
It's a sweet varietal from I guess a large online vendor. I don't know if you want me to mention it or not.
I will say that sweet cherries typically don't do so well. They bloom at different times in the winter and spring, and the flowers get frozen off of it, and the fruit gets frozen, and they don't do so good. That said, I never want to discourage experimentation. If you want to experiment with it, go right ahead, but be prepared for heartbreak.
Okay.
So I don't have any tricks. Sunshine, warm temperatures, moisture around the roots, that's all the plant needs usually to bud out and sprout, have leaves, have flowers, and yours has had all those things and still hasn't done what you expect it to do. And it's been in the ground for a while, so it's not like it's just planted yesterday. So time is all I can say is going to tell, but I would bet against you, Daniel. Sweet cherries do not do so well in Georgia. But, hey, let me know. If in June it all comes out and you have cherries in July, let me know. I want to know about it.
All right, will do.
All right, see you, Daniel. Thanks for calling.
All right, appreciate it.
I love experimentation. I experiment all the time. I've got plants in my yard that have no right, no reason they should be in my garden, but I plant them anyway just because I want to see how they'll do. I want somebody to be able to ask me a question about it and me say, yeah, I've grown that plant, and it didn't do this or it did do that. Lots of things that you experiment with, and I do love to hear the results of experiments. Pat is in Woodstock and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Pat. Good morning.
Hi, Walter. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling for a neighbor who has horrible problems with red ants.
Yeah.
He's done everything that the big box stores have told him. There are several mounds. They've got all kinds of little highways going around and so on, and now starting to get into the house.
Ooh.
Do you have any new suggestions?
The brand name insecticides should do a pretty good job of controlling ants, and sometimes I hate to recommend them because they also do a pretty good job of controlling lightning bugs and beneficial insects and beetles and spiders and things that are good for you in the lawn. On the other hand, I don't like ants in my house, and your neighbor doesn't either and doesn't like them in his lawn particularly. So I guess I'm going to just say, no, you do what you can to do it like it says on the label, to water it in if it calls for it to be watered in, and let time take its course with it, because the insecticides all are good. They're not bad. All of them work. And so any of the brand name things, the Ortho and Bayer and Bonide and folks like that, should have an insecticide that'll kill ants. It's just waiting for it to kill them all.
So it really just takes time.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect it to happen in like 5 days or a week, even maybe 2 weeks or three would be what I would expect.
Oh, okay. Now, do you reapply?
Not unless the label says so. Most of the time, one application is fine if he's put it out at the rate recommended on the label and done all the directions like he's supposed to. Let it do it. Let it do its job.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe you might have a new... Now, do you know the old-fashioned thing of putting dried grits? You heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard about it. It doesn't work, Pat. If you've tried it, it's oftentimes recommended for fire ants, and the reason that it doesn't work is ants don't eat solid food. They don't eat the dry grit, and it gets into their stomach and gets wet and explodes, and you hear it pop, pop, pop all over the yard. No. That's not what ants do.
Too bad. Well, especially in Georgia, you would think that would work.
Well, sadly, it does not. There are many things about fire ants that are recommended. As a matter of fact, I am the... I don't know if you call the beneficiary or the victim of a particular rumor on the internet that you could take club soda and pour club soda down in a fire ant mound and the carbon dioxide would suffocate them. I'll tell you the story about it, Pat. It was a friend of mine, Eddie Rhodes, and Robert Rhodes, his brother, who are up in Cobb County. They're master gardeners up in Cobb County. And I think it was Eddie or Robert, one or the other, that asked me one time, did I think that would work? And I said, I don't know. It worked. Experiment with it and let me know what happens. Again, I try to encourage experimentation, of course. But one of them was the editor of the Master Gardener newsletter up there and put, instead of experiment, he said, endorse. Walter Reeves endorses putting club soda in fire ant mounds. And so that caught on, and it went around the world about 9 times before he could stop it. It was viral. It was one of the first viral messages on the internet. It got to be a place I was getting emails just about every day from extension offices and master gardener organizations and folks all around the world wondering if I were correct. Would it really work? Finally, there's a website called Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S, Snopes.com, which is where you go if you want to check and see if something is really true or rumor or truth or not. I am on Snopes.com saying, by the author, by Walter Reeves, saying, no, it does not work. Don't believe it. Carbon dioxide has nothing to do with fire ants. Will not kill them. Will not do anything.
Well,
nor with cinnamon or things like that.
Well, you would also be in what they call an urban legend.
Yeah, urban legend. Right.
I'm so sorry. Well, thank you so much for being there. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
46 minutes past the hour gives Ehab a turn. Ehab, Woodstock, I should say. Hey, man, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. I do have emerald arborvitaes that I planted about 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Like 3 feet when I planted them. Now they doubled in size. And lately I start seeing that they develop yellow patches, okay, some of them, okay, individual ones. Okay,
so just patches, Ehab, not the whole tree, but just patches on the limbs, right?
Correct, yes. And then after that, it turns like, you know, maybe 10-15% of the tree in one single limb. Okay, because when you look inside the tree, it's like three of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know what is driving that.
Well, I'll give you something to do for homework for me. I want to make sure you don't have spider mites. And spider mites would cause patches because there's a localized population gets on the needles and sucks the sap out. So you get a yellowish casting to the needles. So get one of the yellowish limbs and a piece of white paper and take the limb, cut it off. So it's in your hand, a little switch about a foot long, and slap it on the paper. Put the paper on the tabletop and just slap it on there. Maybe take it outside with bright sunshine. And slap it down, and if you see little tiny orange dots, which will move, you can put a circle around each one with an ink pen, and you'll see them move out of the circle after a while. So if you see these little orange dots moving around on the white piece of paper, that says spider mites, and you would have to get a miticide, and I have two or three miticides on my website that I'm trying to think of the name of one. There are two or three, anyway, that you can get that will kill mites. Not insecticides, but it must say kills spider mites on the label. That's one thing to think about, is spider mites.
You said it's like orange dots?
They're very tiny. If they were big, I'd tell you they're great big. You see all eight legs, but you will not see all eight legs on a spider mite. You'll see little orange dots moving around.
Yes, I did see that on a retaining wall.
Those were not, they were probably not spider mites. Those were clover mites, the red ones. This is the time of year when red clover mites are everywhere. They don't hurt arborvitae at all.
Okay. Okay. Do I need to trim the dead limbs or just spray over it?
If the limbs are dead, if they're brown, they're not going to recover. They're not going to come back on and turn green again. So I would say, prune them out, allow some of the limbs that are next door to it to green up and sort of move into that hole in the foliage of your arborvitae. If it's not spider mites, make sure you're watering them, because that's one of the things that arborvitae does decline from severely. If it doesn't get water, if it's dried out, even 4 years later, it could be possible, I suppose, they could be dry, although we've had a lot of rain around my part of the world. So make sure they're watered, check for spider mites, and if that's not it, hey, call me back again. It's 6:49. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend, and the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
Let me run with you. Tonight I'll take you on a moonlight ride. There's someone I
used to see. And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security this morning. It's going to be about the same today as it is tomorrow. 40% chance of rain around town today and tomorrow. High today 83, low of 67. And tomorrow, same thing, just about high of 85, low of 66. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Actually, let's give a little happiness to somebody and give away two tickets to the Penny McHenry Hydrangea Festival. I think it's four. Yeah, that's four. We got four tickets to the Penny McHenry Hydrangea Festival out in Douglasville. This is June the 2nd and 3rd. It's coming weekend. And we'll give it to the, which caller, Ashley?
Since there are four tickets, I guess we'll do caller number four.
Caller number four, of course, to our contest line, which is 404-741-3333. 404-741-0750. These are tickets to the Penny McHenry Hydrangea Festival, and the hydrangeas in Douglasville are gorgeous this time of year. Penny McHenry, of course, was the founder of the American Hydrangea Society. And knowing that we would be giving away the tickets, I went by her house, which is not too far from my house on Flair Knoll Drive, and saw the hydrangeas there. Some of them are blooming already. Some of them are just budding up right now right by the street. Penny started a movement for the appreciation of hydrangeas in America that were quite the thing. 404-872-0750 is the number on the Lawn and Garden Show. If you have a garden question, be sure and give me a call during the break. We've got lots of lines open, and you can give your question early. Get it done right now. Our contest line, 404-741-0750. Tickets to the Penny McHenry Hydrangea Festival in Douglas County, Georgia. It's 6:58 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.